This is Jonathan Lane from Fan Film Factor, and I am here with the one and only Mr. Alec Peters, Garth of Izar himself. Welcome, Alec.
Hey there, Jonathan.
Do I hear dogs in the background?
Yeah, you hear our foster puppy, Mojo.
Mojo!
Who just got on Friday, and who is not happy about being locked in the crate.
Oh, no.
I know.
I'm interviewing you, and he's locked in the crate.
Either that, or he runs around and tries to get into the bunny cage and rips up all my shoes. So he'll get used to it. I just gave him a bone, and he'll get used to it. So there's always a new animal at the Peters foster household.
And is this the same dog that you were chauffeuring when we were supposed to have our interview last week, and you couldn't make it because you were still on the road?
I don't know when we were supposed to talk last week.
I don't know. I just remember you said that you had to go out of your way to pick up a couple of dogs that were going to be fostered.
Yeah, that was Friday, yeah, probably. So.
Yes, with Alec Peters, it's either Axanar or dogs, everybody, just so you know.
Or an auction.
Or an auction, that's true.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, you know, this interview is basically covering probably a lot of the same stuff that people have heard on Axanar Confidential if they've been watching it. I'm just going to try to cover it for people who haven't heard everything. And I was going to joke that, you know, this is going to be just like Axanar Confidential, except it won't start with, you know, 15 minutes of talking about dogs.
So much for that idea.
All right. Well, let's dive directly into Axanar. As we're speaking, it is Sunday afternoon, a few days after your birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Alec.
Thank you very much.
And we are now, what, like 4 weeks, less than 4 weeks away from Axanar shooting. Is that right?
Yep, just about.
Okay, so only about 4 years late, but we made it.
I don't know how late it is. I mean, we were going to release the movie in parts starting in 2016. So really, you know, 3 years.
Oh, okay. But you're supposed to start shooting.
Well, no, we're not releasing until next year. So 4 years.
That's why I said 4 years. Now, there's folks out there who will say, I'll believe it when I see it. But let folks know at this point, what has been going on? I mean, you know, October, the first week of October that you're shooting, there's a lot that's been going on behind the scenes that you're getting ready for. So if this doesn't happen, there's a lot that has to be rescheduled. So tell people what's been going on to prepare for this.
Well, first of all, anyone who says anything like, oh, I believe we want to see it or whatever, you're not paying attention at all. And it's always aggravating people who don't read the emails we constantly send out, who don't go to our website, who don't watch the videos, and then make comments like that. Well, if you're not paying attention, then, okay, just don't have any opinion because you're not informed, which, of course, is the great problem with our country is no one's informed. But anyone who's been paying attention knows what's going on and knows that we've been, you know, working on the bridge and working on the studio and working on costumes and working on casting and working on the script. And, you know, there's just a ton that's been going on behind the scenes. But of course, also people don't understand how movies work. They don't understand how movies get made. And, you know, you've got a lot of your work is done in pre-production, right? And that's where we are right now.
Yeah, one of the other fan filmmakers that I talked to, and, you know, he had a lot of moving pieces for his as well. He said, you know, it's sort of like making a stir fry. He was a cook. You know, you spend like literally hours and hours preparing everything, chopping every single carrot, you know, grating the ginger and you know, measuring out this and measuring out that. And you're like 2 hours of that, and then you stir fry for like 5 minutes. So that's the thing about pre-production. If you do pre-production right and you get all your I's dotted and your T's crossed, then production can go really, really smoothly. But if you get pre-production wrong and you forget stuff and you're sloppy about getting stuff ready, then production can just be a mess.
Yeah, right. I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, you plan your work and work your plan, as we say in the entrepreneurial world. That's the way you get things done. Is there's an enormous amount of work that goes in to planning a production. And if you don't do that work, then your production is a nightmare. I mean, everything at New Voyages was always just in... It's everything was done in, you know, some sort of panic mode, some sort of, you know, there was so little planning that everything just was you know, FUBAR'd and you were constantly making up for stuff. That's why they have three episodes that haven't been finished. You know, and having been on all three of those, I can attest that, you know, it was just because that or lack of planning. Sets being built, you know, while they're shooting. I mean, you know, you can't do that. You have to plan. I'm always amazed that people say, well, what have you been doing for 3 years? Well, you know, some of us have a life to lead. Fans aren't paying me to do this. No one's paying me a salary. That means it's done in my part time. That's volunteer work. Well, it's my hobby. It's not my work. So how many, you know, people have a project of this magnitude as their hobby? You know, it takes a lot of work, and it's just, and that work is done in everyone's spare time. It's not done full time. So plus we had a lawsuit to go through, and plus we had to move across the country, and, you know, plus I had to, you know, rebuild my business, and, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that has to happen. So,
and the auctions and the dogs and everything.
Yeah, right. There's just a lot going on, and people need to understand that, you know.
So let's talk about some of the stuff that's actually been going on. Like, for example, obviously the bridge is now, what would you say, like 98% done, 99% done?
Yeah, it all depends on how far we want to go with it. What, you know, how detailed we're going to get. Oh, we're going to revise those graphics. Are we going to put computer monitors in the arms of the captain's chair? I mean, realistically, it's ready to shoot today.
I remember Dana, this is Dana Wagner, who basically was in charge of finishing the bridge. Yeah, he told me that you still need, I guess, the carpeting on the floor.
That's almost all done.
That's almost all done. Okay.
It's not carpeting, it's rubber, you needed, rubber matting. It's not
sorry, rubber matting, okay. You needed two replacement television monitors, is that correct?
Yeah, that's so minor. I mean, you just buy two TVs.
And you'll be buying the two TVs before you actually film in October, or is it one of those things where you just won't shoot in that direction?
No, really, we are spending more time talking about two TVs. I mean, it's just like one of a thousand little itty-bitty things you get done on a production. So, yeah, we're going to buy two TVs. Next.
Okay.
And here's the thing, Jonathan. You cannot put time and effort into really minor things. You know, you've got to expect people, you know, Dana needs $600, and he's, you know, and we're talking budget tomorrow, and he's got a list of things to do. And it's two TVs, it's rubber flooring, it's this, it's all these little things, and those aren't the things that make your production successful. And if you spend too much time worrying about them, you forget the things that are way important. Like, who's your DP? You know, how many crew people do you have working? Do you have a production sound person that's competent and can get it done? You know, we have four different units within our shoot next month. We have the production, we have the audio drama, we have behind the scenes, and we have the live stream of what's going on. You know, if I personally worry about two TV screens, then none of that stuff's going to get done. You assign that to, like, the third person below you. Buy two TVs. Here's my credit card. Done.
Well, then let me ask you a question, because here's my credit card and done. A lot of people have been wondering about paying for this. I was going to leave this until later in the interview, but, you know, hey, segue now. You had said last year that you were looking at maybe $150,000 to $200,000 of budget to do this.
For the whole show.
For the whole
four now, different shoots. Plus post-production, yeah.
Okay. So I'm assuming that this first shoot, I mean, assuming that that's four shoots plus post-production, then you're probably looking at least, what, $30,000 to $50,000 for this first shoot. Is that right? Maybe?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably it.
You know, because you also have to, you got to get the costumes. You're going to do makeup. Obviously, you got all the people coming. You got to feed them while they're there. I don't know if you're paying people for their time. I know that I can't on Interlude because of the guidelines. I don't know if your guidelines tell you that you can pay people or not. Can you talk about that? Because if it's a settlement, maybe you can't.
I don't talk about my budget.
Okay. You know, I agree with that now that I printed my budget. You should talk about your budget.
I warned you before not to release your budget. We went through this. Then all of a sudden you get every armchair quarterback, Carlos Pedraza, who knows nothing about making a real film, who then starts criticizing you and asking you questions. And it's not my job. I'm going to spend zero time between now and the shoot answering questions of people who have no clue what filmmaking is. It's not worth it. So I know how much money I need. I know that we shot the one-day Vulcan scene for somewhere between $13,500 and $18,000. I forgot if I never remember if that. I think $13,500 was the shoot itself plus visual effects. So, you know, it was a. So you know, I'm going off a $15,000 a day number.
Well, and that was one day. So basically, you're shooting 2 days.
3 days.
That's 3 days. Okay, so that'd be 45.
$40,000. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's roughly the number we're going to shoot for.
So now I'm going to ask the magic question of. When are you going to, you can't crowdfund, I know that, but you did say that you're going to try to raise private funding, basically telling people to go to Aries Digital, and once they're behind the firewall, if they'd like to give you some money, you'll be happy to take it. But you haven't done that yet, you're 4 weeks until shooting, so who's paying for this?
Well, first of all, we can crowdfund. We just can't use Kickstarter or Indiegogo or GoFundMe. So we can't use a public platform, but just like Renegades is doing, we are using WordPress crowdfunding, which is a plugin application that lives on the WordPress software. So it'll look just like Kickstarter. It'll work just like Kickstarter. But yeah, you'll have to log into Aries Digital for that because it's not going to be a publicly available. You won't be able to just find it on our website type thing. And it's going to be marketed to all our donors, our previous donors specifically.
And you've got, like, what, 10,000 or 12,000 previous donors?
Yeah, something like 13,000.
Oh, okay. So when are people going to be invited to do that? Because, like I said, you're shooting in 4 weeks. This is going to cost you $45,000. That doesn't sound like a lot of time to raise that kind of money.
Well, that presupposes that we're only going to be using the money from the crowdfunder. I have my own money, which I've been spending on this project for years, so if I need to float the production and we fundraise after it, we can do that.
Uh-huh. See, you just answered a question I think a lot of people were wondering about. I know I was, which is basically who's paying them for the food? Who is paying for that sushi? You know, who is paying for those costumes? You were ordering, I think, what, like 200 uniforms, if I remember correctly?
I'm not sure if it's 100 or 200, whatever the number is, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a large number.
It's three digits.
And one of the reasons why I'm using your uniform manufacturer is that, you know, you're getting a bulk discount on them, and therefore, if I piggyback, I enjoy that same bulk discount. So, you know, but I mean, it's a lot of cost. Now, and I think a lot of people are going to ask the question, why do you need 100 or 200 tunics? And the answer is that was one of the perks from one of the early crowdfunding campaigns, right?
Yeah, I think maybe all three of the campaigns had a tunic as a potential perk. Because I was surprised to go back and see that Prelude had that as a perk. I didn't remember that being in Prelude. But then again, now that I think of it, I was like, that's right, because Diana had ordered her. That's how we met with Diana had gotten a costume had gotten a uniform. So, yeah, so that's definitely there's a lot of them. I can't remember the exact amount. We were talking about it the other week. So, but yeah.
And just so you folks know, I've actually been talking to Alec a great deal about the uniforms for obvious reasons, since I film a month after he does. Obviously, he needs the tunics before I do for his shoot. So, you know, if they're not ready for his shoot, they're not ready for mine. Or if they are ready for his shoot, then they will be ready for mine. But the thing is that there's a lot of moving parts just in getting these tunics made. So, you know, that's one of the other things you've been doing all these many months is getting the fabric and, you know, getting a seamstress to actually make your samples of this to make sure that they actually would fit somebody. And that just happened recently, right? You actually had the samples made, right?
Yep. I was wearing one today. The final adjustments were made and the pattern adjusted, and it's going back to California, and the tunics are going to be made.
That's cool. Now, and I believe, you know, under the heading of Murphy's Law, which happens to all fan films, Lord knows it's happening to mine, you actually had an initial seamstress who was supposed to make your sample who broke her hand. Is that right?
Well, actually, we had already made the samples, and then the company that was supposed to manufacture them moved and lost everything. So we had to do them again, and then we were going to just have the initial samples made by one of our seamstresses from Prelude, she broke her hand, and we really needed to move it on to a professional group that could do it. And Kate Berg, our costume designer, handled that. She got the initial ones made. Then they got shipped here to Atlanta, and we got our line producer put us in touch with a cutter/draper here. Those are the terms used for what you need. And she and her team made a male and a female. We got, I'm the size model for the male tunic because I'm a 42 regular, which is kind of like a large. It's like right in the middle, right? So what you try and do is get someone in the middle range of the size, because then you're going to make them smaller and bigger, and you just modify your pattern accordingly. So I'm a 42 regular, so I'm the male pattern. And then the female pattern, we got someone who was a size 6, which is kind of in the middle, because typically, especially on screen, your actresses are usually somewhere between a 0 and a 6. Also, if you're dealing with fans, they're usually, you know, a 6 or larger. Those are kind of the sizes. So we made tunics just for me and just for this size model, and they're being finished, and I think tomorrow they get shipped off overnighted to Kate in L.A.
Now, once they're in L.A., is there a factory that will be creating them, or is it just like, you know, one or two people who are just going to be up all night sewing? What's the process?
Yeah, there's a factory that's going to be doing them.
But not like, you know, underage labor or anything like that, right?
No, I mean, it's amazing how much of the garment industry is in the East L.A. They've got, you know, people who are doing this for a living, and that's what they do, and they cut patterns, and they, you know, they sew costumes, and they sew shirts and pants, and, I mean, the guy that was doing ours, you know, had his own label. He had his own jeans label.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving pieces in all of this. I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, even while you're doing this part-time, you know, how much is going into this. Now, you've also brought on a lot of staff in the last month or two. I mean, you brought on a line producer, right, and, you know, a director of photography, sound people. You know, who are these people? Who's coming to work on Axanar at this point?
The one thing I've told you about is I'm not talking about my crew. Just because we have stalkers, as you well know, and they are, you know, an unethical group of bullies and pathological liars. We have to shield our team now from these people because they'll dox them, they'll attack them. I mean, the other day someone, you know, just fans are being attacked by Carlos Pedraza, Sean O'Halloran, Sandy Greenberg, that whole group. I mean, it's really disgusting what they do, but they're basically bullies out to attack anyone associated with our production. So it is incumbent upon us that we don't expose our people to public social media lest they be attacked by these individuals. Who, by the way, I think it's ironic that Carlos had to publish a blog that was, what was it called? We're really good people or some bullshit like that.
Well, we're not bad people with all the charts and everything. Yes, I remember.
Yeah, and it's just like, if you have to spend a blog with charts trying to convince people you're not bad people, odds are you're bad people. And one of the guys who wrote you, and then he wrote me, and I won't say his name here, he's given me permission to post this stuff, but he basically said, you know, he apologized. He was like, I was a member of this group, and all of a sudden he goes, I'm at church and realized that, why am I associating myself with these people? Meanwhile, Alex raising money for some lady who's homeless, you know, and I think, not to toot my own horn, but listen, the people who work on Axanar are good, decent people. We're all fans. We all support other fans. We support other fan productions. Some of us do dog rescue. We support people like when Stogie needed a new well or this lady or something. We support other people. We don't spend a ridiculous amount of time bullying and attacking people we don't even know. Or, you know, in the case of Carlos Pedraza, that does know me. He met me, and, you know, still he's pathologically and psychotically stalking me and publishing bullshit about me. So, listen, I'm not going to reveal the names of who's working on my crew. I'm not going to reveal the name of who I cast in certain parts. When the movie comes out, people will find out. And sadly, that's the way it's got to be because of, you know, Carlos and his minions, his attack minions.
Well, that's unfortunate because that also screws up my next question of, you know, who have you cast for this? I guess I can ask the question, though, because, you know, she's either in it or she's not. Are you going to be getting Kate Vernon?
Yeah, Kate's reviewing the script right now. We wanted to wait until we had a finished script to send her, and so she's looking at the script, and I think she'll be pretty happy because Sonya plays pretty large in the next two episodes.
Now, are you looking to bring her down for the shoot that's happening in a month?
No. No, she'll shoot in L.A. Everyone who's in L.A. and all the visual effects makeup shoots in L.A. probably like January, February.
So she's not going to be on the bridge commander of the Ajax, huh?
Nope.
Oh, that's too bad. I was really looking forward to seeing her in that center seat. So anyway, let's talk about the four shoots that you have to do. Because obviously the first one... Well, let's talk about the first one first, because there's more than just the shoot. You're doing a lot next month, like a ridiculous amount that I have no idea how you're managing to get it all put into one weekend.
We have four units, and each unit has a director and a producer and a team supporting them.
And so what are these four units doing? One of them is shooting on the bridge,
production,
right?
One's shooting the production, one's doing the audio drama, which is obviously all audio. One's doing the behind-the-scenes footage, the interviews and such, and behind-the-scenes footage, and one is live-streaming the entire weekend.
Which I think is really cool, that there's actually going to be the opportunity to go online and watch Axanar being made. For everybody who says, I'll believe it when I see it, well, guess what? You can see it. So that's a lot. And this is all happening just Saturday, Sunday? Are you using a long weekend? What's the situation there?
It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Most likely we're going to be shooting on the bridge on Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday we're going to be shooting on green screen. That's the way it's lined up right now.
And is your green screen going to be at Aries Studios, or is it going to be someplace else?
We're kind of keeping that a close secret.
Okay, then. You and your secrets.
I mean, you know the way it is. You know what's going to happen as soon as I give out some tidbit of information.
Somebody's going to call somebody else and say, did you know that Alec Peters really did such and such, and suddenly you're having to defend yourself.
So,
yeah, that's true.
You know, I keep getting emails. I keep seeing comments on our YouTube, and the comments are all, well, not all of them, but like every third comment is like, this is the Star Trek I wanted, not Discovery. So there's a huge number of people out there who want to see Axanar get made, and we're going to make it, and it's going to be great. And, you know, I think CBS be damned, we're going to give people the Star Trek they want.
I don't think you need to say CBS be damned. I think obviously, you know, they've given you permission through the settlement to do this, you know. So as long as you abide by the stipulations and restrictions and allowances of that settlement, you are probably the only fan film ever to get permission to be made, which is ironic since you were also the first one to ever be sued. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously just do your best. I think people will appreciate that. Obviously, yes, we're looking forward to it, and I know there's a few people out there who don't think it will ever be made, and, you know, frankly, I am looking forward to publishing the blog that says, guess what? Here's Axanar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the other shoots. So there's three other major shoots. You said there's going to be one in Los Angeles.
Yeah. That'll probably be a two-day or maybe a three-day shoot on green screen. Then there's a third shoot a second shoot in Los Angeles, our third shoot, which will be on location. It'll be, we're not revealing the location.
Of course, you're not revealing their location.
But yeah, that is the shoot that anyone who donated to be an extra will be part of, or donated to be a production assistant or, you know, an associate producer or anything like that. It'll be a great shoot. I'm really excited. It'll be one day, but it'll be just, knockdown, drag out, awesome.
I'm going to be at that one. I'm not going to be at your shoot in October, unfortunately, since I'm going to be traveling to Georgia in November, and I just couldn't justify two round-trip plane trips. But once you're in L.A., you're not getting rid of me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Then we'll have a fourth shoot, which will be here in Atlanta, which will be bridge and anything else we need.
ADR, pickup, things like that.
Captain's quarters, I mean, yeah. I mean, ADR, we can always do. It's not part of a shoot, per se.
Oh, okay. for those who don't know what ADR is, that's basically if you don't get good sound when you do your first production because, you know, the mic's bumping into something or they're too far away from it, they can record that in a sound booth and they just dub the, you know, voice over it and you try to match the where the lips are. But they do it all the time in TV. In fact, if you want to see an example of really bad ADR from Star Trek, the episode Rascals of TNG, where Picard and Guinan and Ro and whoever else, you know, get turned into kids, whoever's doing the young Guinan does not know how to do ADR and completely does not match her lips. And you keep watching it, and it's like watching a bad Godzilla movie.
That's funny. Okay.
So now everybody's going to go over to Netflix and start watching. Or CBS All Access, if you have that. So after you do the shoots, you still have to do the visual effects, the CGI. I won't ask you who's doing it. And write the music, do the sound mixing, all of that stuff. So at this point, what kind of timetable are we looking for? You know, I mean, the first shoot's happening in October. Second shoot, third shoot, whatever else. What happens from that point on?
Well, everything's happening concurrently, too, right? You know, visual effects will be worked on and post-production and sound. So, you know, our goal is to release this at San Diego Comic-Con this summer, which will be the, you know, this what, the sixth anniversary of us releasing Prelude and the 10th anniversary of basically the inception of Axar.
Okay, so all that has to happen. Obviously, all that has to be paid for as well, and now we are approaching like $150,000 and $200,000. So are you saying that you're going to start trying to raise money when? Like after your first
shoot?
Well,
we'll
shoot,
probably
or?
Start, you know, right now it's a matter of getting the software up and running on our website, and Rick is supposed to be working on that this week. He's promised me, Rick, who helped finish Aries Digital, he's promised me we're going to have it done before before he leaves for his vacation. Then we'll be able, you know, if I think we may actually be able to get about 2 weeks of fundraising in, which I think is enough to raise $30,000 for Axanar. You know, it's been a while, but I'm hoping. So we'll see. And then after that, the whole idea is that we show people what we're doing, right? You know, we show people what we're doing and we give them an opportunity to perpetuate it. It's like, hey, here's what we're doing, and we need more money, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It took me 3 months on Interlude to raise $19,000, so if you can do $30,000 in 2 weeks, more power to you, my friend.
Oh, well, I think we can. I think we can.
Well, you've got the mailing list, so, you know. I'll let you handle your crowdfunding, and I'll handle my crowdfunding. By the way, folks, I just want to say once again that none of the money raised for Interlude is going to support Axanar. It is all going to costs associated with the production of Interlude. The only money that is earmarked for Alec at all is just the rental of Aries Studios for the weekend. And the reason that I'm insisting on paying that is simply because I don't want to imply any connection between Axanar Productions and Interlude. So any other fan production would be paying him $250 a day to rent the facility. So I want to be just like any other fan production. But aside from that, you know, that's why I published my budget blog, because I wanted people to know that, no, this is not just a backdoor way of funding Axanar and, you know, funneling money to Alec. This is actually, this is going to cost this much. This is going to cost this much. And if you calculate it all, $19,500. But anyway, back to Axanar itself. So this coming shoot, you've got a whole production team going to be there. You're going to cast bodies. You're going to cast actors. You're going to cast extras. You also have a whole bunch of volunteers coming, right?
Oh, yeah. We've got like 30 so far.
30? Can you even fit all those people into the studio?
Well, remember, we have multiple locations.
Oh, that's right.
We have 3 locations. And, as far as fitting them, yeah, I mean, remember, we had 35 people the weekend we moved in back in 2017. So,
yeah, that's true. Well, some of them were walking around the bridge, and now you're not going to be able to walk around the bridge. You're going to be filming on the bridge.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and you'll need to have a lot of folding chairs set up and a lot of sushi on the craft service table.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, how are you, what are you going to be feeding your people? And I'm saying this not just as part of the interview, folks, but a month later I'm going to have to feed my people there, so I was kind of wondering what you were doing to feed everybody.
You know, we actually haven't decided yet. Chris, the line producer, and I have a meeting tomorrow, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about. It's possible that, I mean, remember, I live 5 minutes away, so we have a full kitchen here from which to prepare food. So we've talked about everything from preparing food here and serving it over there to hiring a professional craft services company to having volunteers. We want to make sure that there's, you know, one good hot meal served a day. And we don't want that to be pizza or sushi. You know, you want to be able to serve, chicken and vegetables and rice as well, whatever, and multiple options. And you might have people who are vegetarians, and you might have people that are, you know, need to be gluten-free. So, you know, we literally need like half a dozen people just handling the craft services and the food.
Yeah, that was one of those crazy things when I was budgeting with my directors to discover how much food costs for a simple two-day shoot, because you need to feed people breakfast because they're showing up at 8 or 9 o'clock, and you don't want people to be operating on an empty tank. You know, they're going to be going all day. So you give them breakfast. You give them lunch because you don't want them heading off to Burger King or whatever just when they're supposed to be on, you know, and it's like somebody say, hey, where's Gladys? And, you know, well, she's going to be back in another 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, and she's back 25 minutes later, and you lose that time. So you keep everybody there on the soundstage. And then you want to give them dinner because you're probably going to be going to 8 or 9 o'clock. So that's about $25 a day per person. So if you've got 30 people on your set, then that's, what, $750 per day for 30 people? Two-day shoot, $1,500. I was like, holy crap, I've got $1,500. That's like, you know, almost 10% of my budget just on food. It's amazing how much the dollars just pile up on all these little things. So I'm not surprised that, you know, you've got a budget of potentially $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000, you know, per shoot. It gets up there. You know, my shoot is very small compared to yours, probably. You know, I don't have as many people coming, and, you know, we're not doing as much stuff, and obviously we're in your facility. But even mine is going to be close to $20,000. So, you know, people don't realize how much these things can cost if you want to do them right.
Yeah. No. Exactly. You know, I think the thing people need to realize is that I put roughly $200,000 of my own money in this, you know, both when we were in California and maintained this studio. You know, we ran out of money in 2016. I mean, we had great donors who helped us move, right? We raised like $20,000-something to move, which was awesome. But other than that, I've been paying all the expenses. We had Otherworld Computing helping us with the studio, and now we've got patrons from our Patreon campaign helping with the studio, which is fantastic. But still, it doesn't cover everything. It just is, you know, there's still a lot of expenses, you know, that I'm covering, and that, I mean, we're still paying off debt from Axnar, and I'm still paying off this month. Hopefully, I'll be totally finally finished paying off the debt. But yeah, that's,
you, I mean, with the exception of the Patreon, which is pretty much just going to help with the rent, I mean, you're getting like about $2,100 a month, I think, right now on what $3,000 a month rent.
The rent's $3,600 a month. We got a discount on our because of the parking, but that went away because that customer moved.
About to pay full price.
It's about $3,600 a month. Then you've got insurance, and then you've got utilities. You know, it's a big chunk of money.
So you got about $2,000 a month coming out of your own pocket just to keep that bridge out of the rain.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I appreciate because I want to film on that in another 2 months. But so yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's what, $24,000 a year. that you're putting in, you know, out of your own pocket. You've put, as you said, $200,000 of your own money in over the time. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money. Yeah, anybody who says that you stole money from fans or that, you know, you were only out for yourself or whatever doesn't understand that when you wind up $200,000 poorer than when you started, that the concept of convincing somebody that you ripped off the fans doesn't really hold any water.
Yeah,
because if you had ripped off the fans, you'd have that extra $200,000 in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I think the only thing I ripped off was my bank account. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, you know, Prelude to Axelor, with all the things I've done in my life, coaching and winning national championships and building businesses and everything, Prelude is, you know, the thing I'm most proud of.
And you should be proud of it. And you know, for anybody who says that Alec didn't really have anything to do with X, and I realize we're both spending time pontificating, but, you know, hey, why not? You know, there's a wonderful interview that I did at Axicon with J.G. Hertzler and Gary Graham. And in it, they basically credit Alec as being an integral part of why Prelude went so smoothly. I mean, obviously, you know, Christian was a good director. I mean, let's, you know, credit where it's due. He did a very nice job. You know, and Rob Burnett did a very nice job editing. I know there's some bad blood there, but, you know, once again,
no,
credit where it's due.
You know, listen, I am the first one to say that Christian did a wonderful job with the actors. Rob did a great job in the editing room. I mean, no question about it. Unlike them, I give credit where credit is due. You know, I don't want to diminish anyone's work, even if they've been a dick to me because of some spat. I mean, you give credit where credit's due. You don't have to be my best friend for me to give you credit for what you've done well. I've always said Rob is a brilliant editor. That's not Rob's problem. You know, and Christian did a wonderful job with the actors. That's it. Listen, to most people, I'm the face of Axnor. Let's face it. Yeah, you know, I'm the executive producer. I play Garth. I'm the one who's doing the podcast and the video streams and everything. Listen, most people who watch Prelude don't even know who Christian or Rob are. But they know who I am. And now, that doesn't mean I did all the work. I just was listening to a thing that Robert Picardo was doing about Gene Roddenberry and the Planetary Society. And there was a quote from Gene Roddenberry who said, you know, what you do is you get great people and you let them do their thing, which I've been saying for years, right? The thing I did the best on Prelude was hire great people to work with me. Now, I also wrote the story. I also co-wrote the script. I also did all the casting, and I raised all the money, and I put the team together. If you want to then say that I didn't do anything, I don't think you know what you're talking about. The Prelude wouldn't have happened without me. So the people who say that, you discount them because they're idiots, and they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I have a new appreciation for the role of executive producer now that that's what I'm doing with Interlude, because, you know, like you, I've put together an amazing team, which I have identified, you know, and there's Josh Irwin and Victoria Fox who do the Avalon Universe films, and they're going to be my co-directors, and Victoria is going to be handling the actors, and Josh is going to be handling a lot of the technical stuff and painting with light, as he says, and I've got an Emmy-winning musical composer, Kevin Croxton. Mark Edward Lewis is going to be doing my sound mixing, and my pseudonym friend, Lewis Anderson, is going to be doing the visual effects. You know, Dana Wagner, who built your bridge, is going to blow it up for me. He's actually going to have the console spark, which is really, really cool. I can't wait to see what that looks like. So, you know, there's this really great team coming together. But one of the realities of this is that without the funds, they can't do anything as much as they want to. I mean, Kevin could write music, I'm sure, in a weekend, but if there's no scene shot, there's nothing even to write music for. So we have to have the equipment available. We have to have the uniforms for people to wear, because I'm not going to shoot people in T-shirts and jeans. You know, everything has to come together. And as executive producer, if I'm not raising the money, no one is. And for 2 years, you were the person in charge of raising money for Prelude to Axanar and Axanar. Other people helped you. I mean, I was one of the people who helped you. Lots of people.
Sure.
Diana helped you. But the fact is, if you suddenly quit the project, it would be dead. There would be nobody to take over from you. Nobody else was as dedicated to getting Prelude and then Axanar itself done as you. And you allowed everything to happen by raising that $101,000 for Prelude and then, you know, the $1.2 million that was going to be used for, you know, Axanar. You know, that was a full-time job for you at that point. And,
it
you
was.
Know, seeing how much I've just had to scramble for, you know, the $19,000 that I've raised. You know, I don't think people realize that kind of level of crowdfunding doesn't just happen. You have to make it happen. But he says Alex didn't do anything.
How many people have raised that kind of money, right? Alex, you know, we've got, you know, basically you've got Renegades raised a lot of money, you know. God bless them.
Yeah, $850,000.
How much?
$850,000. When you got sued for crossing $1 million, they were at $850,000. They were right on your heels.
Yeah. You know, and they're the model. They did a lot of things before we ever did. I always give credit to Renegade because I mean, really, Renegade is the one who gave me a lot of ideas about how to do things right, you know? So, yeah, I give credit to Renegades for kind of pioneering a lot of the crowdfunding stuff. They did such a wonderful job. I think they were the pioneer, and then we went about perfecting it, right? You know, and we just raised more money than anyone, but, you know, everyone did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, everything came together with Axanar, and it's just unfortunate that CBS and Paramount came and raided the game.
I agree.
Ultimately, you survived the lawsuit. You've been keeping the stream alive with your own money for the last 3 years at this point, and, you know, now that we're on the cusp, the eve of production, you know, I think a lot of Axanar fans, you know, are feeling like we kept the faith. And it's going to finally happen. At least it better finally happen.
Yeah, you know, I think so. And remember, we've been working this plan since last year when we launched the Axicon and got the bridge finished. You know, it's been a year-long trek to where we are.
It's been a long road getting from there to here.
I guess you could say that.
All right, Alec. Well, I'm going to go let you get back to your dogs, who, thank goodness, were quiet for the rest of the call.
the little one is... He's locked up, and he's probably asleep because I took him for a nice long walk beforehand. So we're all good. But thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Anyway, I will see you in November, but I'll be watching your live cast in October.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you again, Alec.
Take care.